Welcome on back into our Friday edition of Sports Talk. Steve Geller along with Charlie Long and Cullen Steele, being a wise guy behind the glass today.
Dude, I'm just pumped for the Pelicans hour. We're doing Pelicans this hour. I can't wait.
Yeah, Ollie's coming up soon.
Ollie Cosell, credentialed NBA writer covering the Pels, will be joining us talking about the good, bad, and the ugly from the Pelicans schedule that came out yesterday. No, we're looking at our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line right off the bat here, Charlie. Seeing besides my OT take, not sure about what I had the Astros, but all dead this year. Still way to go in the AL West looks possible.
Yeah, he said that basically building off of that take earlier about the offensive tackle that we finished last hour with, he was talking about the Astros, which are on, my Astros are on an 8-game winning streak, Steve. I'm feeling great about it. They now have a 3.5-game lead.
I remember there was a time they thought they were going to be sellers and like get rid of Bregman.
They were never going to be sellers. It was a matter of, you know, could they figure things out? And it seems like they're starting to do that. And the starting rotation has just been excellent. So all you Astros fans out there, you know what I'm talking about. The Astros are hot again. We're coming for that AL West title. We're going to be back in the playoffs and see how far they can go. But
speaking of rotation,
the Seattle Mariners have one of the best in baseball, undoubtedly. But they also have one of the worst offenses in baseball. And you know who's going against that worst offense in baseball? Mr. Paul Skenes tonight, Steve. I was looking at this earlier. If you're looking at the over-unders around games across, you know, the MLB for Friday, August 16th, you see some games are like 7.5, 9.5, 8.5, even upwards of 11.5 when it comes to this matchup between the Padres and Rockies. So obviously they're expecting that to be a very high-scoring game. A game that we're not expecting to be high-scoring by any stretch of the imagination. Over-under set, Steve, I don't think I've ever seen this. Over-under set at 6.5 runs total for the game.
Yeah.
Paul Skenes and the Pittsburgh Pirates, who were looking very good as far as trying to compete for a wild card spot in the NL. I think they kind of bought at the deadline. They made a couple moves there. They are now on a 10-game losing streak, the Pirates are, and now they're going up against the Seattle Mariners, who are on their own 3-game losing streak after getting swept by the Tigers in embarrassing fashion, where they scored one run, two runs, and one run. A couple stats here, guys. Logan Gilbert versus Paul Skenes pitching tonight. Logan Gilbert is ridiculous. He's one of the best pitchers in the American League, going up against Paul Skenes, who's the favorite for the NL Rookie of the Year. Logan Gilbert with a 7-8 record, but wins and losses don't matter as pitchers, as everyone that follows baseball knows. 2.91 ERA, 0.87 whip. It's even better than Skenes, which is super impressive, and 154.2 innings pitched. Meanwhile, Skenes' 6-2 record, 2.25 ERA, a 0.96 whip, and 92 innings pitched. He's still trying to make his case, not just for NL Rookie of the Year, but staying in that conversation for potentially being the second player to ever win the Cy Young in their rookie season, joining Fernando Valenzuela, who did in 1981. Paul Skenes versus the worst offense in baseball. And I know that by saying this, he's going to get lit up tonight, Steve. That's just kind of how my jinx works. But if you're looking at the worst batting averages in baseball, I mean, you can kind of guess where I'm going with this. The Chicago White Sox, who are, by the way, I think 29-93 at this point, if not 29-94, I'll double check that in just a second, are hitting .220 as a team. That's bad. They're 29th. You know who's 30th? The Seattle Mariners.
Bum, bum, bum.
The Seattle Mariners have a winning record because their rotation is like a 95 to 100 win rotation. It's ridiculous. But their offense is like a 60 win offense. So it's just such a conflicting thing. The Mariners are hitting .216 as a team, as a batting average. And then if you're looking at OPS, because some people like that more, it's the amount of bases you get per plate appearance. Mariners are at .667. So we're hoping to see Paul Skenes have a nice bounce back performance.
I was going to say, he had a little bit of a rough outing for him, at least.
He had a little bit of a rough outing against the Dodgers by his standards, right?
Yes, right.
Like giving up 4 runs in 6 innings. It's not great.
But still struck out 8.
Exactly. He still had to, you know, it's just not up to his standard. And he's put such a high standard for himself that we can say that. At the same time, you're kind of hoping, fingers crossed, that we'll see a pitching duel between the Pirates and the Seattle Mariners tonight. And that Paul Skenes picks up his 7th win of the season against that really, really bad offense.
Seeing that's a 5:40 first pitch on Apple TV, that I do not have.
Yeah, we'll share updates as it goes along. And the Paul Skenes watch that we were doing all summer is going to continue just, you know, for the final couple months of the season. Because basically at this point, with that 10-game losing streak, the Pirates that were kind of contending for potentially looking at a wild card spot in the NL have all but kind of crashed out of that. They're 7.5 games back of a wild card spot, while two squads in the NL West with the Diamondbacks and the Padres are surging. So, you know, the wild card's kind of out of view for someone like Paul Skenes in his rookie campaign, which is so disappointing because it's such a it's already such a legendary rookie season for a pitcher,
right?
And he's probably not going to get any type of playoff action.
Talking about, you know, the Apple TV, do you have the MLB package? Because I know you're such a big baseball fan.
I got MLB Network. I don't have the Apple stuff or anything like that. And I have my ways of watching my Astros.
There you go, right? You'll find where there's a will, there's a way.
I got Bally, and I watch, Bally carries, and there's no reason for me to have Bally at this point because the Pelicans have ditched them.
But
they carry my hated Rangers. I hate the Rangers. I'm not a Rangers fan by any stretch of the imagination. I'm an Astros fan, obviously, so I need to figure out, you know, how to ditch that. Just because, you know, the last time I watched the Rangers play the Astros, you know, in that series, that was, I think, about a week ago at this point, it was listening to those twerps on there just celebrate Framber Valdez coming one out short of a no-hitter.
I definitely subscribed to Bally just during Pelican season, but that, thankfully, is no longer necessary.
Yeah, no, it's great news. So the Pelicans, and we'll be carrying Pelicans.
Right, exactly. We'll have Pelican games here.
It's going to be fun.
And you can watch them on, what is it going to be, on Fox this year?
No, yeah, and I'm looking forward to breaking down the schedule with Ali in this next segment because there's a lot of cool stuff that I see, at least at a glance, based off of upcoming season projections. And Steve, we've talked about this as well. David Griffin had mentioned this, I think, in, you know, the basically a presser that he did in the offseason, that if you're looking at the Western Conference, this was leading into the offseason, there's going to be like 14 teams trying to win games. Like, it's such a difference from the West to the East. And I know that, yes, the Celtics won the NBA Finals, blah, blah, blah. But if you're looking at top to bottom, the West is still stacked.
Right, the amount of competition in the West is ridiculous.
It's still stacked. And so, you know, there's a lot of good games against strong Western Conference opponents, which, barring any injuries happening to either team, on paper, look like really tough slates. So we'll break it all down with Ollie.
Yeah, it was like, you know, you mentioned in the West, too, and it's like I just think a team like, obviously, with Victor Wembanyama and the Spurs, they're just going to get even better.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's just one example, too. Like, the only team that you could see trying to lose games entering the season is maybe Utah. Outside of that, I can't really think of one. Like, San Antonio is going to be looking to take a step. Houston's going to be looking to take a step. And these are all teams that missed out on the playoffs this past year. Obviously, Minnesota's up there. Golden State is going to be trying to win.
Portland's done it all.
Portland's probably in that same kind of conversation with Utah. So, I don't know. Maybe David Griffin was kind of slightly exaggerating when he said 14 teams were going to be trying to win. At the same time, though, if you're Portland, you have like these young pieces like Scoot Henderson and, you know, a couple of young shooters, Shaedon Sharpe. They're probably going to be trying to take a step, right? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm looking from all the teams that made the playoffs and playing a year ago. I can't really visualize anyone taking really that big of a step back either.
Yeah, it's a lot of teams that are going to be trying to be in that top 10.
I just don't want the Pelicans to be in the play-in anymore.
I hate the play-in. I hate it so much. I hate it because the Pelicans are in it every year, and the play-in Pels has become kind of a meme. But just get into the top six.
That's what I'm saying. I keep hearing folks, this roster should be a top four seed in the West. Please, just get to the six.
Yeah.
I'll take that at this point.
Exactly. And, I mean, talking about the Pelicans and expectations, did you see the clip? I sent you the clip.
Yeah.
It was like Windhorse and Bontemps and McMahon all kind of –
kind of down on the Pellies right now.
They're buy or sell for all of the teams in the NBA, and they were all basically sell on the Pelicans. It's interesting because, you know, you add someone like DeJounte Murray, you're feeling pretty good about yourselves, but at the same time, like, the guys made some decent points about...
And they're leaning on the fact the team doesn't really have a really starting legitimate center.
The center spot.
As an area of a concern.
For sure. And, you know, I don't think they're fully bought into Zion either, being the dude that played 70 games this past year.
Right. I would definitely want to see, obviously, consistency from him there. But it was obviously, I think, huge for him last season. You saw that he got it, that he needs to take care of his body better, something hopefully that Kendra Miller can learn something from with his injuries. But Zion, I'm hoping that he's got this regimen down. Unfortunately, you know, there was an unfortunate ending to the season with the hamstring issue at the end of the year. But for the entire season, man, Zion was a huge plus. And it, being able to stay healthy, you just hope that track can continue with him because, man, I still believe so much in this player.
Yeah, and you just want to see him end a season now because he hasn't been able to do it. And the closest he came was this past year and the play-in tournament when he gets injured against the Lakers. And then
such
everything.
A death blow.
Exactly. But that's what you want to see, right? So, you know, I think that not necessarily they're flying as much under the radar as the Saints are, the Pelicans, like, because there still are expectations for this roster entering, you know, the 2024-25
season. Agree, yeah.
Like, people aren't saying that they're the worst team in the NBA. Like, some people are saying that the Saints are going to be the worst team in the NFL. I mean, that's a take that's popped up on my feed multiple times. But for the Pelicans, like, they're still expected to be at least be a play-in team. It's just a matter of if they can take that step and be a playoff team. And if they can stay healthy. And that's all the questions that we'll have to answer throughout, you know, basically, because the season starts in 2 months and then, you know, the 8 months after that.
We got plenty of questions. We will ask Ali Cosell, credentialed NBA writer who covers the Pels, talking about the schedule and much more with him around the NBA. We'll be right back with more Sports Talk, so stay tuned right after this on WWL. We are back here on Sports Talk and getting into a little NBA action. Credentialed writer for the NBA covering the Pelicans, Ali Cosell, joins us now. Ali, man, we had the schedule come out yesterday, and NBA training camps will be starting up soon enough. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing well, Steve. Good to join you guys. And yeah, there's always excitement this time of year, right? Because guess what? The records, everybody's tied at zero. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm expecting the Pelicans to have a big year, despite the fact that everybody's seemingly thinking that that hole at center is just too big. I think they can overcome enough.
Yeah, that's a great place to start, I guess. You know, being Charlie, we're talking about this. There seems to be a lot of negativity around the team right now just because of the uncertainty at the center position going to this year. And can they really play small ball? And will Zion stay healthy? From your vantage point, at least, what do you feel about the Pels and the overall center position? I know they've got some guys in the mix right now. Do you expect them to be any players to try and make a move going forward?
Yeah, so look, the reason I'm a little more optimistic, I think, than most is because of last year. Jonas Valanciunas' minutes have been trending downwards ever since Willie Green got here. And last year, I think he averaged less than half the game, right? It was about 23.5 minutes. But the last 2 months or so, I think it was right around 20 minutes or maybe even less per game. So they weren't relying on a traditional center. And remember, this team won 49 games. They were winning games without having that legitimate 7-footer, 250-plus guy. They relied on a lot on Larry Nance. They relied on a lot of other guys, smaller lineups. And that's why I said it gives me hope, because the way Willie Green likes to play and the strategies he utilizes is basically made for small ball. He wants the versatility, right? He didn't want a scoring center. He never utilized Valanciunas unless a lot of guys were out. We all saw that. So that's why I think Daniel Tice actually makes for a better fit. I wish there was maybe two of them, right? Because behind him, to answer your question even further, I don't know who you can rely on. I feel like Trey Jameson, who is signed to a two-way, he's kind of the backup to Tice for right now. If something happens to him, well, there's your other big body, because we know Missy's not going to be ready. But maybe the hope is that he can get some minutes toward the end of the, you know, next season, simply because he's supposed to be a quick learner. I don't know. But the biggest thing I'm watching is who is going to be that small ball center for the Pelicans when they don't go truly small, right? When they are out there with, say, Zion, Trey, and Herb at the forward and center positions. Is it going to be Carlo Matkovich, or is it going to be Jeremiah Earl Robinson? I think, honestly, we're going to get the answer to that maybe in preseason. I think that position is up for grabs. If Carlo plays like that one game he did in summer league, he might have the inside, step, so to speak. But if not, then I think it'll be Jeremiah Robinson Earl, and I'm curious if that guy can handle serious minutes. He showed us something in glimpses, right? He could hit a three. He was definitely a lot more mobile. But again, yeah, we'll have to see, right? It's an experiment. It's not ideal not having a center, but I'm not, like I said, the walls aren't coming down. You know, the sky isn't crashing.
Yeah, Ali, 68 days until the opener, which is just, it feels like a long time.
Who's counting though, right?
It's going to sneak up on us. I can't wait. But with the Pelicans schedule, I want to break it all down with you because I think there's a lot of interesting stretches here. But first and foremost, I want to talk about the NBA Cup because they obviously rebranded from the in-season tournament. That's what the NBA Cup is. But the Pelicans, this West Group C really feels kind of like the group of death, Ali. I mean, you're playing Denver at home, and then you're playing at Dallas, you're playing at home against Golden State, and then at Memphis. Those four games all take place basically in a two-week stretch in November. I mean, those are some tough opponents in the Western Conference that you're having to go against. And I know that David Griffin said that 14 of the 15 teams in the West are going to be trying to win games this upcoming season. So the West in general is just going to be really tough. But at the same time, it feels like the Pelicans got a really tough draw with, you know, Denver, Dallas, Golden State, and Memphis.
Yeah, as far as that cup, I mean, yeah, the road couldn't be any more difficult. And I'm sure those four other teams, the ones that are in that same bracket, feel the same way, right? So it's going to be just almost whoever gets lucky, right? Because in such a small sample size, you can't say that the best team's going to come out of it, right? It's just five games against a different opponent. So, yeah, I mean, look, Denver and Jokic, nothing else needs to be said there, right? Three-time MVP. We know what Steph Curry does, right, for a living, because we just saw in the Olympics. So Golden State's not going to be a pushover, even though they don't have Klay Thompson. And then, of course, there's Dallas. Hey, they were in the finals. And then Memphis, boy, I'll tell you what, if anybody's going to set the world on fire this year, I'm expecting for be John Morant. Zion Williamson's going to try and make a point, right? I feel like, because I've heard nothing but good things this summer, but man, he hasn't gone through what John Morant has. So, yeah, Memphis, I expect them to maybe contend for the top four again in the West.
Yeah, I want to look into the schedule because, you know, I highlighted those four games that are all in November, and there's that stretch, right? Like, you start the season against Chicago, and then you have back-to-back, you know, roads matchups against Portland twice, and then Golden State twice, and then you have those four home games, Indiana, actually five basically in six, because the stretch I want to talk about is the back half of November. Five home games and six matchups. You play Indiana, Atlanta, Portland, Cleveland, and then at Orlando, and then at home against Brooklyn. Brooklyn, we're expecting to be kind of one of the bottom-tier teams in the Eastern Conference. Mm-hmm. But then after that, that stretch, Ali, it's basically nine games at the end of November.
Yeah, it's brutal.
Oklahoma City on the road, at home against Denver, at home against the Lakers, at Dallas, at Cleveland, at home against Golden State, at Indiana versus Toronto, and then at Memphis. That seems like a gigantic stretch, just early on in the season, too, where you're going to learn a lot about this team, I think, pretty soon.
You will, and that's why it's going to be so important before that stretch comes up to get off to a really good start. Like, for instance, when I look at the first 10 games, I can easily envision this team starting off, say, something like 7-3, right? Portland's not supposed to contend, even though you're going to get every young team's best shot, right? It's best to play those type of teams towards the end, right, when teams are kind of tanking. But again, Portland shouldn't present a problem. Golden State has no size. You're not worried there. Same thing with Atlanta. They just seem middling. I don't know if they've done enough this summer. So really none of those matchups scare you, like I said, until you get to Cleveland, right? And that's where I think we're going to learn more than anything. Can the Pelicans play undersized, right? Because up until that game, I'm not too worried about anybody they face. Like DeAndre Ayton with Portland, he doesn't play physical. You're not worried about Vucevic with Chicago, right? He's kind of a stationary guy. But once you get to Cleveland, they've got those twin towers. Orlando, their size has always given the Pelicans problems, especially last year. And then you just go down that list. Yeah, I mean, Anthony Davis, Nikola Jokic. I mean, it's tough. So I'm curious. That's what I'm going to be looking for, especially during that stretch.
Yeah, and then go ahead, Ollie.
Do that well, right, then I think Daniel Tice, maybe they'll be more comfortable kind of standing pat or maybe not being so active before the deadline. But if that's, you know, say they fall flat on their face and size is a problem, they're getting killed on the glass, then that stretcher will reveal they need to make a move.
And then, Ollie, I wanted to jump into February real quick because I think it's an interesting one, too. I mean, it's 11 games. Yeah, I mean, it's all against Western Conference opponents, though. All 11 of those games. At Denver twice. You play Sacramento in three or four games, two of them at home. You play OKC. You play at Dallas. You play San Antonio twice at home. And then Phoenix twice on the road. A lot of, you know, Cullen pointed this out to me, that there's a lot of series where you'll play, like, teams basically back-to-back. I think they call it, like, the MLB series, where you have, like, a series against a team where you play multiple games at a certain spot. It happens a few times in February, but just that 11-game stretch, all against Western Conference opponents, I think is pretty interesting.
That's the scariest part. That's the first thing that I always look for when I see a schedule. I look and try and find the most difficult portion. And I feel like the last two games of January, playing Dallas and Boston, then everything you just mentioned in February. And if you think about it, after Dallas and Boston, you're playing 18 straight games against the Western Conference. I don't think I need to remind people, but I will anyways. The top 10 teams in the West, right, all the ones that made the playoffs and the play-in tournament last year, everybody finished at least 10 games over 500. So when you say you're going to play 18 straight games, yeah, that's the meat, honestly, of the schedule. That's the part you've got to somehow get through it as best as you can. So that's the one I'm most afraid of, Charlie, yeah. To your point about the baseball series, right, where you're playing the same team twice, yeah, the Pelicans had five of those type of scenarios last year. This year, it's 10. That's a lot more. So if you have, say you're missing, say, Zion, B.I., or your team's just not playing well, and suddenly you're playing against a team that you might need a tiebreaker over, that's a bad time to drop two straight, right?
Looking at the Western Conference, Ali, I was talking with Charlie before you came on, and it's like, I don't really see any drop-off from any of these playoff teams, and there's could be some more potential, you know, teams vying for a spot. Obviously, a team like Memphis, the San Antonio Spurs, we'll see how much they can progress, but the competition just in the Western Conference is really absurd when you start to break it down. I just don't curious to see if you think any of these teams from a year ago that did make the postseason will have a major dip at all.
I'm a little worried about Denver. You know, Jamal Murray hasn't looked like himself, and he definitely didn't this summer, right, playing for Canada. So that's, you know, that's raising an eyebrow. Also, especially the Clippers. You know, I think Paul George not being there, it's going to be a big deal, because when's the last time Kawhi Leonard made it through, say, 65, right, 70 right. games, right? It's been such a long time. And you know James Harden can't carry a team anymore. So I feel like if any team, say, that made the playoffs last year, I think they're the most likely to slip on down. Then, of course, the Lakers, right? AD, LeBron, if they can stay healthy. I mean, they were healthy last year, and that team only won 47 games, largely the same roster. But, no, Clippers is the one I think that can slip. And, you know, I just mentioned earlier, Memphis is coming. I'm penciling right. them in the top 10 for sure. So I don't know who you want to take out. I guess it might be the Clippers. But, hey, it's really going to come down to injuries, those guys, right? We always know that a couple of teams always get hit hard with them, and those are the ones that usually slip down out of the race.
I'm bullish on the Memphis Grizzlies too, Ali, but at the same time, one of those teams maybe that could slip up a little bit is Golden State. Like, I mean, they've been pretty quiet this offseason, I think, whereas they've kind of thrown their name into the hat for multiple different players. We all know that they were in full, like, full-court pursuit of Lauri Markkanen, and that just didn't work out. So maybe the Warriors could be a team that potentially slips up a little bit. But then you're looking at the teams that didn't make the playoffs or the play-in tournament out of the West last year, like the Rockets and the Spurs, like teams that have gotten better this offseason that are going to be trying to push their chips to the center of the table to at least make the play-in tournament. I mean, once again, if you're looking at the back end of, you know, the play-in tournament standings, kind of who's going to figure out that 8, 9, 10 spots, it's going to be super competitive once again. It's just the West is such a gauntlet.
Yeah, it feels like out of the 15 teams, you can only pencil in Portland, right, not making, say, even the play-in tournament, and probably the Utah Jazz, right? Yeah, I think they've made it clear. We know the way Danny Ainge operates. He wants Cooper Flagg. He wants to nail a draft pick or two in the next two upcoming drafts. So that's a team that, again, might start off kind of decently. Everybody talk about him, but he's going to pull out the rug out from underneath all those guys, and they're going to tank. But other than that, yeah, Houston, I mean, what they do. 41-41 last year, 500 ball. They could take, you know, Jalen Green, several of their other young guys could take a step forward. They could sneak in the play-in tournament. Spurs, too. Victor Wembanyama, he's knocking on the door and being, what, top 10 player in the NBA. I mean, scoring 26 points against the U.S. men's basketball team, right? U.S. superstar Laden team. That was impressive. And we saw he finished the season strongly last year, too. I agree with you, Charlie. I'm worried about Golden State Warriors. They went full court press, not only on Markkanen, but also Paul George. They know they need another guy. They're susceptible to slipping out, too. I should have mentioned them. Yeah, good point.
Yeah, it's just a couple of those teams. But at the same time, it's just going to be so competitive because these teams that didn't make it that you see improving are going to be right there. And the Grizzlies, I mean, that's a team that definitely worries you just based off of their ceiling with someone like Ja Morant. The last question I had about the schedule is that you always want to look at the end, too. And the April slate, I think, is also kind of tough. Like, you have two games in L.A. against the Clippers and Lakers back-to-back, at home against Orlando, who the Pelicans struggled with this past year, at Brooklyn, which is kind of the one kind of slip-up game there that you feel pretty decent about, at Milwaukee, and then you wrap up the season in the Smoothie King Center at home against Miami and OKC, finishing the season, obviously, with one, basically the team that everyone is kind of early preseason penciling in as the number one team in the Western Conference. I'm interested to see your thoughts on the April slate as they kind of close out the season, and if you think that that slate is kind of favorable, I guess you would say.
Charlie, I personally hate it. There's too many Eastern Conference matchups there, right? Usually you're jockeying for position. Almost every team is, outside, like I said, the ones that you know just aren't going to make the playoffs or the play-in tournament. But you have a chance to really improve your standings because you're facing a lot of the Western Conference teams, like Pels have done last two, 3 years, but not this year, right? Four of the last five against the East. So if they need to, you know, either maintain a position or move up, need some help, it's going to be a lot tougher this year in trying to do it yourself. So hopefully before you get to April, they will have kind of cemented, right, their place in the standings and not have to worry about, you know, okay, we've got to overtake this team. Good thing we're playing them, because that's not happening this year.
Ollie, looking at the Pelicans training camp, you know, the Saints hit the road this year. We're out in California. They're coming back next week. But the Pels will be in Tennessee for training camp this year.
I like it. I like that they're going to be somewhere else. And, of course, they've been up in Nashville before. So I think this works out. You know, a lot of staff's familiar with the city. Some of the players right there were there for that, too. And I just think it's always good, right, for bonding type of, right, you know, things. You just want to be able to get away, so you're going to spend more time than usual because you're not going to your house. You're going to be more amongst teammates. And, you know, there's only, I mean, 9 players are carrying over from last year, which is a decent sum. But, again, you've got to now incorporate who's going to be a big part of it, DeJounte Murray. And then there's a lot of other guys, too, right? You're still trying to figure out that center position, how to play. I like it. I like getting away. I think that will help, and it'll be beneficial.
Ollie, are there any other slates from the schedule, you know, that leak tomorrow that you're keeping an eye on, too, obviously, outside of, you know, what we talked about with February, April, and then, you know, the in-season tournament stuff in November?
I think we nailed it, right? You got to get up to a good start because that's what the schedule is kind of giving you, right, that runway. And then, of course, yeah, it's that meat. Can they stay healthy? Can we get another 70 games out of Zion Williamson, please? That would be immense, right? And then, yeah, I mean, other than that, there's not much. The only thing we don't know yet, we only know 80 games, right? In December, because of that in-season tournament, you still need to figure out 2 more games. So if the Pelicans, of course, move on, get to play in Las Vegas, well, that's how they're going to pick up the extra games because they advance in the in-season tournament. But if they didn't, I'm curious who those 2 matchups will be for them. What is that? I think the middle of December. 2 more games will be added one way or the other.
Definitely appreciate the time, Ollie. We'll be talking to you soon. So looking forward to the countdown to that season. And, yeah, Chicago Bulls opening up at home this season opener, October 23rd. Can't wait to be in that number. Know we'll be seeing you out there. Thanks a lot, Ollie.
Absolutely. Steve, Charlie, you guys have a good weekend.
Take it easy, Ollie. 86 days or 68 days.
68 days away.
I said it wrong. 68 days, but who's counting? I am.
We'll be back with more sports talk. Try to get into our training camp sound bank when we get back right after this on WWL. Welcome back into sports talk. Halt on the training camp soundbite segment. Totally forgot about triple option that we talk about every day going into some of the top stories in sports and giving our takes. Guys, I'm going to go on to who the Saints are playing this Sunday, the 49ers. Well, they got some issues of their own besides injuries. They're still in this long-going contract stalemate with their star receiver Brandon Ayuk, and the GM John Lynch recently just said it's been a long, arduous, hard process, a hard journey, and they're feeling this urgency to get a deal done. We started this early, and for whatever reason, things haven't been able to get across the finish line. They've been frustrating, but the communication's still been really good with Brandon and his agent, and we're trying to figure out solutions. I'm just wondering, you know, how long is this continuing on? We've seen and heard, I guess, about a deal being in place with the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Correct.
And nothing still have come across about that. I guess that's a fallback option for the Niners if they can't get the number right with Ayuk. But this has gone on for way too long.
Yeah, no kidding.
And I don't know. I just think that it's definitely troubling for the Niners, but it's nothing that they're not familiar with either. I know they had issues with Bosa. They didn't get a deal done with him for a while. And we'll have to see what happens with this going forward. But I'm curious to see it in the end, though, if Brandon Ayuk does, in fact, stay at San Francisco 49er. It doesn't feel like that, even though they feel like they keep talking about how both sides are working on a new deal.
The recent reports from the NFL Network guys were that the 49ers had a deal in place with Ayuk, but that he hadn't accepted it. So I guess they still haven't reached the number that he's looking for. But then the opposite side of it was that Pittsburgh apparently had a trade in place for him,
right,
with a potential contract ready to go for him as well. It's just a matter of if San Francisco wanted to accept it. It's such a strange situation because you're right, Steve. It really has dragged out. It's taken forever to figure out. And, you know, I had this pipe dream that he would end up in Washington with Jaden Daniels, and he would be like the wide receiver 1 to wide receiver 2 of Terry McLaurin and
Jahan Dotson.
They didn't
seem to be interested, huh?
No, I mean, it would have made a lot of sense for them, but Ayuk makes a lot of sense for a lot of teams. It's
sure.
A matter of the money, right? Are they willing to pay a wide receiver 1 in this market the type of money that wide receiver 1s are kind of going for at this point?
Plus, you have to give up assets to acquire them first and then pay them.
Exactly, and I don't know necessarily if the 49ers are reaching quite up towards 30, right? That's probably what around what Ayuk is looking for, the 30 average annual value, which is, you know, it seems crazy now. If you would have told people 5 years ago that that's what a wide receiver one is going for, they would have told you crazy. But at the same time, that's just now the going rate. You look at what happened with Justin Jefferson's contract situation, and I know that Brandon Ayuk's not that, but CeeDee Lamb, also one of the top receivers, is waiting to get paid as well. It's these top receivers know that the receiver market is booming, and they're waiting to kind of cash in. So that's what's taken so long with Ayuk, is that he's waiting, I think, for them to reach his number. And if not, maybe Pittsburgh has won a deal.
What you tossing into the triple option gumbo?
I kind of talked earlier about this. Our texter, let's see, it was 8942, had messaged about the Astros, and my Astros are really kicking butt recently, 8-game winning streak. And then, of course, they have the classic trap series against the worst team in baseball with the Chicago White Sox this weekend. So, but Spencer Arrighetti's on the mound for the Astros tonight, a former UL Raging Cajun, someone that I covered when I was working in media in Lafayette.
Nice.
And Arrighetti has been on fire recently, Steve. The last two games, six innings pitched and seven innings pitched, respectively. So in August, he's got a total of 13 innings pitched. And in these two starts, Steve, seven hits allowed in 13 innings, three earned runs, and get this, 25 strikeouts in 13 innings pitched. Like, that is
mowing him down.
Yeah, impressive. 12 strikeouts in that first game, 13 strikeouts in that second game. I think I read a stat from Opta that he's one of the first, if not the first, rookie pitcher in MLB history to have back-to-back starts with 12 or more strikeouts. So congratulations to Spencer Arrighetti. He got off to kind of a slow start this year, but he's been heating up recently over the last few, basically since July. He's been really impressive, and it's only if the Astros could give him some run support. So they're going against Garrett Crochet of the White Sox tonight, and it just, once again, Steve, feels like a trap series where, you know, they're feeling good about themselves. They just got off an 8-game winning streak on the road, and then they're probably going to drop at least a game to the White Sox, which they shouldn't do, but that's just how it is.
That's what happened to my Yanks recently.
Exactly. So we'll have to see what happens. But with that 8-game winning streak in the Seattle Mariners, who are on a 3-game losing streak, the Astros have kind of built up a little bit of a buffer there in the AL West lead. They have a 3.5-game lead. And, you know, for a quick update, the Pittsburgh Pirates against the Seattle Mariners, as we kind of joked earlier in the hour, that it was going to be a low-scoring game. It has finally kicked off, or I guess first pitches happen. Pittsburgh and Seattle tied at zero apiece in the bottom of the first. Paul Skenes pitches a scoreless first inning.
Yeah, so he gave up one hit, one strikeout.
Yeah, he got into a little bit of trouble. Runners at the corners with zero outs, but he got a strikeout to end the threat.
Cullen, what you got to knock it out the park here
at
the end?
I'm swinging back over to the Pelicans. I've got a lot to throw at you, so I'll try to be quick as possible. You guys know what a rest advantage is, advantage and disadvantage. For those who don't, a rest advantage is when one team didn't play the night before, whereas the other team did. That's the disadvantage. And the Pelicans are on the ends of the spectrum on both sides. They have the lowest rest advantages going into the year with 4, not a great thing. But on the rest disadvantages, they also have the lowest at 6. Okay. So they're going to be in that situation where they're not having to do that as much, but they're also not going to get the benefit of happening to them as much as well. On the inverse, back-to-back games, last year they had, I believe, 3. This year, 16. And then their strength of schedule, 509 last year. This year, they're staring down the barrel of 518. Last year, they were 14th in the league. This year, 6.
Yeah, that's because that Wild Wild West, like we talk about, man, it's insane. So tough.
And there are so many different stretches that you just kind of look at the schedule. And we had a text as well coming in from 0766. The Pels just got Murray. Can't compare last year's matchup to this one. Different team. There's a couple teams that are like that, Steve, just across the Western Conference in general. Like Ali had mentioned with Memphis, right? Memphis was terrible last year, but they were kind of tanking because Ja missed the whole year.
Right.
So, or effectively missed the whole year. He, of course, beat the Pelicans in a couple of games, unfortunately.
Meh.
But if you're looking at the bottom of the West, you can kind of see some teams making strides, right? So it's a matter of if the Pelicans can keep up and not just stay in the play-in tournament, but kind of take a step towards improvement. And as we've mentioned, that top 6 seed.
That wraps up Triple Option. We'll now take a break and be back with more sports talk. Stay tuned right after this on WWL. Folks, Sunday is preseason game number 2, Saints at 49ers in San Francisco. Be sure to catch all the action on your home for Saints football, WWL. Our coverage starts Sunday at 3 with me and Charlie for First Take. 5 o'clock, the countdown, the kickoff with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. Also features our NFL analyst, Mike Dettillier. Game time comes at 7 o'clock with Deuce McAllister. Hollister, Mike Haas, and sideline reporter Jeff Nowak. Got to turn down your TVs and turn up the home team. Nobody knows the team better than us here at WWL Black and Gold all the way. When the game's over, sound off with the Cajun Cannon on the Ciroc Point after. We got 10 hours wall-to-wall Saints football for you Sunday. That starts at 3 o'clock right here on Saints Radio, WWL, AMFM.com, and live on the free Odyssey app. At least game number one, big positive. He came away with the win. You saw some good things in the two-minute situations from Jake Haener and Spencer Rattler. And obviously your young kicker and a Charlie Smith came through in the clutch at the end where, you know, the pressure's all on. Can you make this to win the game? And it was interesting, obviously, hearing him with our sideline reporter Jeff Nowak as the game ended.
Deuce did the great announcer's jinx. Like, he was just right. This is where he struggled. And then he drills it for the win, which was a great feeling for him. His first kick in American football. Awesome stuff.
Be back with more Sports Talk at 6 right after this on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk. Halt on the training camp soundbite segment. Totally forgot about triple option that we talk about every day going into some of the top stories in sports and giving our takes. Guys, I'm going to go on to who the Saints are playing this Sunday. The 49ers, well, they got some issues of their own besides injuries. They're still in this long-going contract stalemate with their star receiver, Brandon Ayuk. And the GM, John Lynch, recently just said it's been a long, arduous, hard process, a hard journey, and they're feeling this urgency to get a deal done. We started this early, and for whatever reason, things haven't been able to get across the finish line. They've been frustrating, but the communication's still been really good with Brandon and his agent, and we're trying to figure out solutions. I'm just wondering, you know, how long is this continuing on? We've seen and heard, I guess, about a deal being in place with the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Correct.
And nothing still have come across about that. I guess that's a fallback option for the Niners if they can't get the number right with Ayuk. But this has gone on for way too long.
Yeah, no kidding.
And I don't know. I just think that it's definitely troubling for the Niners, but it's nothing that they're not familiar with either. I know they had issues with Bosa. They didn't get a deal done with him for a while. And we'll have to see what happens with this going forward. But I'm curious to see it in the end, though, if Brandon Ayuk does in fact stay at San Francisco 49er. It doesn't feel like that, even though they feel like they keep talking about how both sides are working on a new deal.
The recent reports from the NFL Network guys were that the 49ers had a deal in place with Ayuk, but that he hadn't accepted it. So I guess they still haven't reached the number that he's looking for. But then the opposite side of it was that Pittsburgh apparently had a trade in place for him with a potential contract ready to go for him as well. It's just a matter of if San Francisco wanted to accept it. It's such a strange situation because you're right, Steve. It really has dragged out. It's taken forever to figure out. And, you know, I had this pipe dream that he would end up in Washington with Jaden Daniels, and he would be like the wide receiver one to wide receiver two of Terry McLaurin and
Jahan Dotson.
They didn't
seem to be interested, huh?
No, I mean, it would have made a lot of sense for them, but Ayuk makes a lot of sense for a lot of teams. Sure. It's a matter of the money, right? Are they willing to pay a wide receiver one in this market the type of money that wide receiver ones are kind of going for at this point?
Plus, you have to give up assets to acquire them first and then pay them.
Exactly, and I don't know necessarily if the 49ers are reaching quite up towards 30, right? That's probably around what Ayuk is looking for, the 30 average annual value, which is, you know, it seems crazy now. If you would have told people 5 years ago that that's what a wide receiver one is going for, they would have told you crazy. But at the same time, that's just now the going rate. You look at what happened with Justin Jefferson's contract situation, and I know that Brandon Ayuk's not that, but CeeDee Lamb, also one of the top receivers, is waiting to get paid as well. It's these top receivers know that the receiver market is booming, and they're waiting to kind of cash in. So that's what's taken so long with Ayuk, is that he's waiting, I think, for them to reach his number. And if not, maybe Pittsburgh has won a deal.
What you tossing into the triple option gumbo?
I kind of talked earlier about this. Our texter, let's see, it was 8942, had messaged about the Astros, and my Astros are really kicking butt recently, 8-game winning streak. And then, of course, they have the classic trap series against the worst team in baseball with the Chicago White Sox this weekend. So, but Spencer Arrighetti's on the mound for the Astros tonight, a former UL Raging Cajun, someone that I covered when I was working in media in Lafayette.
Nice.
And Arrighetti has been on fire recently, Steve. The last two games, 6 innings pitch and 7 innings pitch, respectively. So in August, he's got a total of 13 innings pitched. And in these two starts, Steve, 7 hits allowed in 13 innings, 3 earned runs, and get this, 25 strikeouts in 13 innings pitched. Like, that is
mowing them down.
Yeah, impressive. 12 strikeouts in that first game, 13 strikeouts in that second game. I think I read a stat from Opta that he's one of the first, if not the first, rookie pitcher in MLB history to have back-to-back starts with 12 or more strikeouts. So congratulations to Spencer Arrighetti. He got off to kind of a slow start this year, but he's been heating up recently over the last few, basically since July. He's been really impressive, and it's only if the Astros could give him some run support. So they're going against Garrett Crochet of the White Sox tonight, and it just, once again, Steve, feels like a trap series where, you know, they're feeling good about themselves. They just got off an 8-game winning streak on the road, and then they're probably going to drop at least a game to the White Sox, which they shouldn't do, but that's just how it is.
That's what happened to my Yanks recently.
Exactly. So we'll have to see what happens. But with that 8-game winning streak in the Seattle Mariners, who are on a 3-game losing streak, the Astros have kind of built up a little bit of a buffer there in the AL West lead. They have a 3.5-game lead. And, you know, for a quick update, the Pittsburgh Pirates against the Seattle Mariners, as we kind of joked earlier in the hour, that it was going to be a low-scoring game. It has finally kicked off, or I guess first pitches happen. Pittsburgh and Seattle tied at zero apiece in the bottom of the first. Paul Skenes pitches a scoreless first inning.
Yeah, so he gave up one hit, one strikeout.
Yeah, he got into a little bit of trouble. Runners at the corners with zero outs, but he got a strikeout to end the threat.
Cullen, what you got to knock it out the park here
I'm
at the end?
I'm swinging back over to the Pelicans. I've got a lot to throw at you, so I'll try to be quick as possible. You guys know what a rest advantage is, advantage and disadvantage. For those who don't, a rest advantage is when one team didn't play the night before, whereas the other team did. That's the disadvantage. And the Pelicans are on the ends of the spectrum on both sides. They have the lowest rest advantages going into the year with 4, not a great thing. But on the rest disadvantages, they also have the lowest at 6. Okay. So they're going to be in that situation where they're not having to do that as much, but they're also not going to get the benefit of happening to them as much as well. On the inverse, back-to-back games, last year they had, I believe, 3. This year, 16. And then their strength of schedule, 509 last year. This year, they're staring down the barrel of 518. Last year, they were 14th in the league. This year, 6.
Yeah, that's because that Wild Wild West, like we talk about, man, it's insane. So tough.
And there are so many different stretches that you just kind of look at the schedule. And we had a text as well coming in from 0766. The Pels just got Murray. Can't compare last year's matchup to this one. Different team. There's a couple teams that are like that, Steve, just across the Western Conference in general. Like Ali had mentioned with Memphis, right? Memphis was terrible last year, but they were kind of tanking because Ja missed the whole year.
Right.
So, or effectively missed the whole year. He, of course, beat the Pelicans in a couple of games, unfortunately. Meh. But if you're looking at the bottom of the West, you can kind of see some teams making strides, right? So it's a matter of if the Pelicans can keep up and not just stay in the play-in tournament, but kind of take a step towards improvement. And as we've mentioned, that top 6 seed.
That wraps up Triple Option. We'll now take a break and be back with more sports talk. Stay tuned right after this on WWL. Folks, Sunday is preseason game number 2, Saints at 49ers in San Francisco. Be sure to catch all the action on your home for Saints football, WWL. Our coverage starts Sunday at 3 with me and Charlie for First Take. 5 o'clock, the countdown, the kickoff with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. Also features our NFL analyst, Mike Dettillier. Game time comes at 7 o'clock with Deuce McAllister. There, Mike Haas and sideline reporter Jeff Nowak. Got to turn down your TVs and turn up the home team. Nobody knows the team better than us here at WWL Black and Gold all the way. When the game's over, sound off with the Cajun Cannon on the Ciroc Point after. We got 10 hours wall-to-wall Saints football for you Sunday. That starts at 3 o'clock right here on Saints Radio, WWL, AMFM.com, and live on the free Odyssey app. At least game number 1, big positive. He came away with the win. You saw some good things in the two-minute situations from Jake Haener and Spencer Rattler. And obviously your young kicker and a Charlie Smith came through in the clutch at the end where, you know, the pressure's all on. Can you make this to win the game? And it was interesting, obviously, hearing him with our sideline reporter Jeff Nowak as the game ended.
Deuce did the great announcer's jinx. Like, he was just right. This is where he struggled. And then he drills it for the win, which was a great feeling for him. His first kick in American football. Awesome, awesome stuff.
Be back with more sports talk at 6 right after this on WWL. Folks, Sunday is preseason game number 2, Saints at 49ers in San Francisco. Be sure to catch all the action on your home for Saints football, WWL. Our coverage starts Sunday at 3 with me and Charlie for First Take. 5 o'clock, the countdown, the kickoff with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. Also features our NFL analyst, Mike Dettillier. Game time comes at 7 o'clock with Deuce McAllister, Mike Haas, and sideline reporter Jeff Nowak. Got to turn down your TVs and turn up the home team. Nobody knows the team better than us here at WWL Black and Gold all the way. When the game's over, sound off with the Cajun Cannon on the Ciroc Point after. We got 10 hours wall-to-wall Saints football for you Sunday. That starts at 3 o'clock right here on Saints Radio, WWL, AMFM.com, and live on the free Odyssey app. At least game number one, big positive. He came away with the win. You saw some good things in the two-minute situations from Jake Haener and Spencer Rattler. And obviously your young kicker and a Charlie Smith came through in the clutch at the end where, you know, the pressure's all on. Can you make this to win the game? And it was interesting, obviously, hearing him with our sideline reporter Jeff Nowak as the game ended.
Deuce did the great announcer's jinx. Like, he was just right. like, this is where he struggled. And then he drills it for the win, which was a great feeling for him. His first kick in American football. Awesome stuff.
Be back with more sports talk at 6 right after this on WWL.